interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Hump Day to you. And it is a Hump Day Wednesday, November 6th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ready to roll and get you over the hump of this LSU-Bama week on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D, and it's a two-hour tour today from 4 to 6 p.m. We got you, bringing you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've got room for the Saints. We've got room for the Cajuns in today's program, but you know what it is. We're going to talk a lot of LSU-Bama, and we're going to lead with those two teams, their place in the first batch of college football playoff rankings. And I want this to be interactive, so get in early. We do have a guest in our next segment. Hit us while you can. Your thoughts on LSU at number two in these initial rankings. 706-0111. And honestly, I don't care because it doesn't matter. I understand. When I go to at 1037 The Game on Facebook, there's an uproar. There's a stink. There are comments that have had to be deleted. Why? Because a lot of you are ticked off. And a lot of LSU fans, I think, have felt this way. I'll continue to say, I don't care because it doesn't matter. LSU controls its own destiny. And in the event of an LSU loss on Saturday and then a win out to get to 11-1, either that one-loss LSU team with the resume that Ogeron's Tigers have put on paper, either it is better than Oklahoma, the Pac-12, and let's say Penn State or your runner-up in the Big Ten, either it's better than those today or it's not, because there's not a lot that's going to change in the month of November and early December. Yes, there are very important games that are going to be played there, but I just don't see how Penn State's going to develop a resume that suddenly competes with LSU's. The reality is, I don't think they can. Yeah, they've got number 17 undefeated Minnesota this week. And sure, they've got current top seed Ohio State the week before Thanksgiving. And if they win both of those, and then they get to Indy and win the Big Ten, Penn State's in. But I think in that instance, that Ohio State team they've beaten is probably out. The Big Ten is not going to earn the benefit of the doubt of getting two teams in over the SEC getting two in. And so, yes, what I'll tell you is for all the hooping and hollering on social media, all over airwaves, just you yapping your coworker's ear off today, it doesn't matter that LSU is two as we woke up this morning instead of one. In fact, nobody that's ever been one in the initial college football playoff rankings has ever gone on to win the whole kit and caboodle. So there you go. If you believe in the type of black cat superstition that ran across the Meadowlands two nights ago, this ball is in your court. This thing rolled in your favor. But it is Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Bama 3, Penn State 4, and Clemson, your defending national champs, at 5. And so what exactly can we take away from this? Well, as you go down the line, you start to figure out who's next in line, who has the next opportunity if they don't slip up. And you also figure out exactly where the committee's priorities rest. And there is one devil in those details that I do think has properly licensed you to get more than just a little irked. Because what we heard loud and clear yesterday, especially after these rankings were released on the mothership, is that strength of schedule and dominance, that is the word that was used, dominance against that schedule is emphasized. If you're going to try to sell me on Ohio State and LSU's schedule being what and what, we're not going to be able to have that conversation. It ain't apples to apples. LSU's has been more difficult. I don't understand how that could be debated. But what's interesting is that the phrase closer games was used. So the fact that LSU has had closer games against Texas, Auburn, and to an extent, Florida, a game in which LSU won by double digits and covered, by the way, that closer game theory, that doesn't hold water to me. That should have you a little ticked off. But that's the details, right? That's the machinations. That's how this process works, according to the people who are working it from their ivory tower. I get it if that gets you bent. But the fact that LSU's not won, don't lose an ounce of sleep over that. Don't let that part bother you. They'll either get there based off where they are right now and what they do on Saturday, or they won't. These rankings won't affect it one iota, in my opinion. All right, let's take our first call. We'll get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chad, it's good to hear from you. What do you think?
Ben, I could care less. It means a flip of beans to me that LSU's number two. Being a huge LSU fan, actually, I like them better at two. It takes the bullseye off of LSU going into this game. Bama's beat them 8 years in a row, and now LSU might be a little bit hungry too because they think they might not. They think they might need to be their number one also. But it just takes the talk on LSU being number one out of this game. I like it, man. It's less bulletin board material for Bama. That's how I get at it. Ben, one more thing. My biggest surprise was Georgia at six. That was a horrible loss between the hedges against a third-string quarterback for South Carolina. That was my biggest takeaway about last night, man. I'll hang up and listen to your comments, Ben. Thank you.
You got it, Chad. And I think you're not alone. Georgia, the top-ranked team with a loss at six, ahead of Oregon and Utah, 7-8 from the Pac-12, ahead of Oklahoma, number nine. And in a way, he's right, because Oklahoma lost to a team in Kansas State that's now ranked. Georgia lost at home to a South Cagalaga team that is less than ranked. Not even sure they're also receiving votes. And so for a lot of people, Georgia ranked that highly. Boy, the committee must really value that Notre Dame win. They would have to. And certainly, Georgia scored the biggest win of this past weekend in beating Florida. So maybe recent history helped the Bulldogs, but I agree. I thought Georgia would probably be 7 or 8. Six is a step higher on the ladder than I expected. We'll take some more calls. 706-0111. As I venture away from the top four, here's some of my other thoughts about these initial rankings. Clemson, you're defending national champs. They're 9-0, and they're fifth. Today, they're outside looking in. They're undefeated. In 4 or 5 weeks, they'll be in the Final Four. Again, I'll bet all the money on that. All of it. The reason Clemson's currently at five is because they only beat UNC 21-20 a couple of weeks back. So that closer games theory that apparently has LSU lower than Ohio State certainly has bit Clemson in the tuchus. Almost lost to a very average UNC Tar Heels team. And Ohio State, apparently they have dominated to a degree higher than everybody else, which, you know, if that's really the measuring stick, right, then it should probably be Alabama ahead of LSU. Alabama hasn't really had many or any close calls. They haven't played the competition LSU has. So I find some of the justification a little bit dubious, but I'm like Chad, I'm not that bent about it. I'm not that worried about it. LSU's got their opportunities ahead of them. They win on Saturday, and then you got Atlanta, and you're in, and maybe you're in even if you don't win in Atlanta. You lose on Saturday, I think that you probably would be in the same spot whether you were one or two in these initial rankings. That's just kind of how I come at it. As far as some of the other details we discovered, your top two lost teams, both from the SEC, and both have lost to LSU. Florida is number 10, Auburn is number 11, and how about this? It pays to be undefeated if you're a Big 12 or a Big 10 team, right? It pays to be undefeated, except if nobody recognizes you at the big boys' table. If you're used to sitting at the kids' table during Thanksgiving, like Baylor and Minnesota are, doesn't matter if you're 8-0. You'll be ranked 12th and 17th behind two lost teams, and in one case, even a three-loss team. That's got to be a lot of fun, right? Baylor and Minnesota, the disrespect in the initial rankings. All right, we'll take one more call, and then we'll hit a break. Waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline is Frank. Frank, what do you make of these rankings?
Well, everybody's up in arms about LSU being number two, and I've seen it all over social media. First thing we're going to do, we're going to present the mic to Chad so he can drop it. I thought everything he said was spot on. I'm glad they're at number two. I almost kind of wish they were number three because I want more bulletin board material. I need LSU to come out and just whoop the hinus of Alabama. I want them to play for everything because that's what this game is.
A heinous whooping of the hinus. That's what you're rooting for, Frank. We appreciate the call.
Too easy, Ben.
Like stealing. Wasn't sure where he was going there for a second. I do know this. While I am absolutely dubious over why Ohio State is number one, dominating the competition, it's a bit of a dangerous precedent to set, but that's more future talk. As far as the here and now, Tigers are fine. They're going to be just fine at number two, and we've still got an awfully big game on tap. I'll let you hear from Ed Ogeron and Nick Saban as we proceed with our 4 o'clock hour. On the other side of this break, in less than 5 minutes, John Garcia Jr., college football recruiting analyst for 247 Sports, will join us. He's got a good pulse on what's happening in Tallahassee as well. So we'll talk that Florida State vacancy too. And at 5:05, Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com. We will break from LSU-Bama discourse to get into the Saints' second half of the season. So John Garcia Jr., Ken Trahan, and more of you where we can fit you in. That's our agenda on a hump day. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, we've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Must be LSU Bama week if we're going to link up with our next guest. I'm excited to bring him back on as we bounce back in. Waiting for us aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, John Garcia Jr., college football recruiting analyst for 247 Sports. John, happy LSU Bama week.
Yeah, likewise. This it always feels big, but this feels pretty big. This year it feels a little different.
All right, so you put a blanket over the Yellowhammer State when it comes to recruiting. Tell me how this last 2019 cycle led to defensive players who have been forced into playing right away and the job you think they've done, especially in the linebacking core.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, this is something that, you know, trial by fire for any position is always kind of the right formula. LSU, obviously, Derek Stingley is one who's embraced it and been the epitome of something like that. You test the freshman, but if they're up to task, you kind of back off. Well, you know, Bama's hadn't really been tested too much, right? Alabama's had the lead in most of these games that they've played. Well, in all these games, obviously, and they have a quick lead usually. So I do think that despite the real impressive nature of Christian Harris and Shane Lee for Alabama, you know, should LSU elect to run the ball, which is certainly no guarantee, this will be somewhat of the first true test for these guys, despite, you know, 7 or 8 games of experience. I just think that this is the one game that looks like it's going to play much closer. Looks like it's going to be more tooth and nail. You know, how do those guys react in these circumstances? But obviously, you know, the way Alabama recruits is really shown in this kind of game. The front seven, not even just the linebackers for Alabama, front seven guys, D-line, a lot of freshmen in the mix there. So, you know, Nick Saban and company always recruit, you know, quantity as well as quality. And the depth at those positions were paramount in the plan for 2019. And obviously those guys have been used a little bit sooner than maybe even Alabama expected. But we'll see just how up to task they are.
John, we'll jump back into your thoughts on this game momentarily, but I'll ask you about this 2020 cycle and your impressions outside looking in of the job that Ed Ogeron and LSU that they're doing right now. And it's not as you would expect just Louisiana, the Gulf Coast, maybe hitting Houston. This is a national class for LSU, the likes of which we haven't seen in this area in a while.
Well, that's the formula. I think when you look at the college football playoff national champions, which is certainly the goal for LSU, and it should be, that's the formula. It's national recruiting, whether it's Ohio State back in the first playoff, the Bama Clemson back and forth since, that's what those rosters look like. You don't recruit to stay just to recruit it. Now, Louisiana's a great state, and you're always going to recruit it, but not just because you happen to reside there. And this class, I think, has epitomized that from an offensive perspective, and that's clearly the biggest difference. I mean, we always expect LSU to recruit well defensively, so going out to L.A. and getting the number one corner in Elias Ricks, for LSU, that's not a huge surprise, right? It's still a big deal, but not a huge surprise that they're in the DBU conversation, still probably at the forefront of it. But when you start doing that on offense with wide receivers and other positions that you don't traditionally go too far to get, I mean, those great LSU receivers of the last decade, mostly local guys, right? Whether you go Beckham, Landry, even further back, you know, Michael Clayton, those guys, I believe that was Texas. It was all Southeast guys, Texas down to South Florida, kind of the expected recruiting footprint. But now LSU's offensively going to D.C. for a five-star receiver, going back to Cali for an offensive superstar. Those guys are destined for the Pac-12, we always kind of thought. So now you're seeing the immediate impact of not only kids believing in the plan, but obviously now they're able to see it with the results. And I thought that was the most impressive part of landing some of those elite wide receivers. They did so before the season started, before we got to see it on a fall, you know, Saturday. So the season has only maintained what they were able to sell before, you know, Joe Brady and company really put everything together. So that's what I think is different, and that's what's most impressive about this LSU class. And why not? If you're a 17, 18-year-old kid, you're seeing these guys throw the ball around, why wouldn't you want to jump on? I mean, it's easy to access these games and all that kind of stuff. So, but the fact that you got them beforehand, I think, was most impressive.
Talking shop with our guy John Garcia Jr., college football recruiting analyst for 247 Sports, and he hails from the state of Alabama. Give me your breakdown of these two receiving corps. You've watched these talented players as prep stars, and now a lot of them are doing it as second- and third-year players for the Tide and the Tigers. Your thoughts on these receivers and the role they'll play Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, the wide receiver conversation nationally is probably one and two right here with these two programs, but they're so different, right? I mean, Alabama, slender, explosive, run-after-catch type guys, for the most part, with Judy Ruggs, and Louisiana native Devontae Smith. And then for LSU, these are big 50-50 ball, catch radius, you know, guys who make plays even with good coverage. And I think that's, first of all, that's what's hurt Alabama in years past. Look at what Clemson does at wide receiver, which would be the other group to throw in this mix anyway. That's the kind of group that hurts Alabama typically. But Alabama's group has done obviously extremely well in terms of explosive plays, and this contrast will be really fun to watch on Saturday. LSU's cornerback depth, I think, will be challenged because those top three or four guys for Alabama can all do that catch and run. They're interchangeable in terms of who you need to double, who you need to prioritize, et cetera. And then LSU's done it with size and downfield ability. And now you throw in the tight end, too, which is sort of new, right? I think the conventional thought of the LSU tight end was more of a fullback, H-back type. And now Thad Moss and company are kind of widening that opinion just a little bit more. But when you got to deal with Chase and Marshall and Jefferson, you're just not going to allocate as much to the tight end. So the middle of the field, Thad Moss, another big guy, that's just another guy to deal with. So with LSU, I just think of vertical ability, size, and really a wider margin of error than the Alabama guys, where you got to be accurate and kind of throw these guys open, let them run a little bit for them to really get going. But obviously they compensate and excel in those roles. So I do think the LSU group is a little bit more sustainable in a nip and tuck kind of game. But obviously, you know, any of these guys on either side can change the game with one play, and I think that's going to be a fascinating contrast on Saturday.
John, around these parts, there is 0% doubt that Tua Tagovailoa is going to start that game Saturday. My question for you is, how close to normal Tua do you think he'll be?
You know, I think with him having gone through pretty much this exact same thing, I think that's probably the most important part of this for Alabama. And I think when you contrast last year's lower ankle injury to this year's, It's the difference in accuracy versus power. I think last year it's the front leg. It affects the accuracy. This year it's the back leg, so it affects power a little bit more. And any receiver or DB would tell you that I'd rather the quarterback have a strong arm than an accurate one, because we can deal with power. But if he's on point and accurate, it's harder to deal with. So I think that, along with the experience, favors Alabama, that he's able to be more accurate. It's not that leg this time. So I do think that part of it is very different. And gosh, I mean, you've seen the practice clips. He looks the same. It looks normal. So I don't know if you can expect too much of a difference, but at the same time, when the live bullets are out there and flying and you get hit, and you get hit low, and you have to escape and do those things, I think that's where it shows up a little bit more. It's not going to be clean pocket, 3rd and 6, quick release. I think that's going to look as we've seen the last couple of years. But when there is interior pressure and he has to escape and he has to improvise and things like that, that's when I think you'll see more of a definitive, how is this affecting Tua kind of thing. Is he gun-shy? Because it looked a little bit that way last year there at the end, certainly against Clemson. So I wonder about that part of it. But in terms of clean pocket throwing the football, I don't think we'll see any difference in Tua. I think LSU, as you guys expect, there's 0% chance he doesn't play. And with a clean pocket, you should expect, you know, the potential number one pick.
John, I hate to rush this, but give me about 30 seconds of your take on the FSU vacancy. I know you keep tabs on that program.
Absolutely. Wow. Tough gig right now, but still a top 10 gig. I think that they need somebody to be defensively focused, but I think that the conventional thought is they're going to remain on the offensive side of the coin, which I think hurts their process. But speed is their friend. They need to hire somebody here in short order. The recruiting class is falling apart, and obviously they need guys who can come in and compete early. So the sooner the better for FSU, almost either way. So we'll see if the Bob Stoops smoke has any truth to it.
Just crushing it. John Garcia Jr., looking forward to Saturday. Thanks for doing this today, John.
Absolutely, Ben. Thanks for having me.
How good is that guy? We'll discuss on the other side, and we've got modified spreadheads coming at you. After a brief timeout, more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming your way on 103.7 The Game.
For your headlights.
Cirque du Soleil OVO is a family show based on the world of insects, bustling with action and full of fun and color. And at 103.7 The Game, we're giving you a chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show. Coming to the Cajun Dome March 25th through the 29th. Just text Cirque, C-I-R-Q-U-E, Cirque, to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to this incredible show. Once again, just text Cirque to 68683, and you'll be entered to win tickets, brought to you by 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And how about a Saints injury report for you? Don't forget, we've got Ken Trahan coming aboard exactly in half hour from right now. So we'll let him dissect and discuss. But I want to get you the details. The bye week clearly has done the Saints a tremendous amount of good. Jared Cook, Tre'Quan Smith, both full participants in Saints practice today. Cook's been dealing with an injury at tight end. Tre'Quan Smith has been out for several weeks at wide receiver. And joining them from the defensive side of the ball, Patrick Robinson. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury. He was a full participant in today's Saints practice as well. But the best news may come in the form of somebody who's just limited, but that's just better than where he has been. And frankly, he's a better player than all of them. Alvin Kamara, AK-41, limited in today's Saints practice. And so New Orleans, coming off a 7-1 flying start to this 2019 season, and now coming off a bye, they'll begin this ninth game week, 12.5-point favorites at home over the Falcons, and presumably with three starting-level players back in the offense and a subset, sub-package defender in the secondary back as well. That is absolutely huge news. So my plan with this segment is to go split screen with you. We'll keep taking LSU-Bama calls. We'll let you react to the college football playoff. I've also got a modified spreadheads for you, but if you're calling in on the Saints, we'll be your Huckleberry there too. So let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Max is with us. Max, you want to talk Saints injuries? Hit me.
Fight me if I'm wrong, but Josh Hill is a better tight end than Jared Cook.
At what?
I don't think I've ever seen him drop a pass. If you throw that ball to him, he catches it. And he gets yards after the catch. Now, Jared Cook's been turning it on here a little bit better lately, but the first three or four games of the season, he was a drop machine.
So I'd say a few things to that. First, I will tell you that Josh Hill actually was on today's injury report. He was a full participant. So that's good news for Max and all of Houdat Nation. Max, my response to that is that there's a much better track record for Jared Cook. However, and I must recognize this, Cook has been pretty darn good, sometimes very good, on mediocre or bad teams. Now we're starting to see how good can he be when the lights are on with a really, really good team. He's come on late. Since, right before this injury, he was starting to come on. I think Hill is a more well-rounded tight end. I'll still take Jared Cook, the pass catcher. That's just my two cents.
So real quick, I'm going to the Bama-LSU game. So look for College Game Day. I'm going to be dressed up as Purple and Gold Thor.
I love that. I love it. But will you be Fat Thor? All right, Clint. For anybody who hasn't seen Avengers Endgame yet, I think I'm allowed at this point. It's not a spoiler 5.5 months out, is it?
No. Basically, after the Spider-Man movie came out, you can spoil.
I'm past protocol?
Yeah. Okay. You're good.
Will you be Purple and Gold Fat Thor? Becomes the question, Max. I will be looking for you either way. That's actually a bold-faced lie. I'll be driving from Meridian while you're probably starring on College Game Day. Yeah. So for everyone else that's watching that program, look out for Mad Max as he's getting his Thor on with purple and gold flavor. I like that. The Hill-Cook debate is one I didn't think I would get into today. Yes, I will take Josh Hill, the pass blocker. I'm sorry, the run blocker as an inline tight end. And I think he's got strong hands. I think he secures passes near the goal line. I also think he's more wide open because he's Josh Hill. Jared Cook's not as open because he's got a reputation in this league for being a pass catcher who can get open over the middle and usually secures his targets. So I guess it's a fair question for Max, but it's still not one I would really dive too far into. So we've gotten the Saints injury discussion in. Again, we'll take your phone calls. You want to talk LSU-Bama at 706-0111. But with our guy, Cousin Dino, still in the lab marinating on his picks, hopefully we'll get them before playoff season. He had to take off a little time because he's doing too well on the picks trail. Clint, you and I are going to go modified spreadheads. Why don't we do this? One college, one pro game where you just really like one team's line.
For me, on college football side of things, Arkansas, Western Kentucky, the Hogs are currently 1.5-point favorites. For me, I got to go with Western Kentucky to not only win but cover here. It's a 1.5-point spread. Hilltoppers 4-2 just straight up in the last six games. This is pretty much what this is when you just look at a 1.5-point. I think we see the Hilltoppers get it done, and maybe Chad Morris is the next hammer to fall when it comes to coaches on that hot seat. Meanwhile, the NFL, it feels practically stealing at this point in time to go with this one, but I got to. Ravens-Bengals, the Ravens 10-point favorites. Bengals have been trashed. Give me Baltimore and the points.
So I have two games on the NFL side. I like Buffalo, 2.5-point dogs at the dog pound. Buffalo, an underdog, an underwhelming Cleveland. And it doesn't take Chris Berman to lecture you on circling the wagons. These Buffalo Bills are pretty good. We'd like to talk about teams that, they haven't beaten anybody good. Yeah, we kind of thought that about Baltimore, right? And they just smacked down the Patriots to give them their first L of the season. Buffalo is a good football team. And I think that they will win at Cleveland. So certainly I'll take them plus 2.5. And I also kind of like the Saints. Call me crazy. They're 12.5-point favorites. Atlanta, Terrible. And if Matty Ice isn't playing, I think this could be an absolute feast game for the Saints. I've got one on the college side as well, but I wanted to share my pro thoughts. Right about now, we'll take our next call. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Ken is with us. We'll keep jumping around. Ken wants to talk college football playoff rankings. Go.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I only have a problem with Penn State. They shouldn't be there before Clemson. I'm sorry. Clemson is defending national champions. Give them the benefit of the doubt. No, they didn't play any competition, but still undefeated. Ohio State, LSU could win anyway. Ohio State, they say, is the best complete team, but LSU has the resume. You could flip-flop either way. I'm biased. I'll say LSU should have been ranked number one, but it doesn't matter. You're going to play Alabama. You beat Alabama, you'll be number one, unanimous. No doubt about it. So that's my take on it.
I think it's the right way of looking at it, too. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
And that was my take from the open. LSU's not number one. Don't care. Doesn't matter. LSU controls its own destiny. And even in the event of an L on Saturday, a one-loss LSU team, they're either better than Oklahoma, the Pac-12, and Penn State, or they're not. And it was that way before these rankings came out. It'll be that way after they came out. LSU's resume, I would imagine, speaks for itself. Clint, I haven't shown my cards yet on the college side. You want to know how much Haterade your boy's drinking these days?
I can about imagine a lot.
I don't even know what that means from you, but I'll share my thoughts. There are two undefeated teams, both ranked in these first college football playoff rankings below a slew of two-loss teams and even a three-loss Kansas State for one of these two. Baylor, undefeated, they're ranked number 12. Minnesota, undefeated, they're ranked number 17. I will take them to not only lose, I will take them to not cover in their games this Saturday. Number 12 Baylor are 2.5-point favorites at TCU. TCU, a couple weeks ago, knocked off Texas at home. I know that the Horned Frogs at 4-4 don't really scare a lot of people, but I think they've got some pride. And I think inside the state of Texas, this one between the Bears and the Horned Frogs means a lot. I think TCU covers and wins this ball game at home. And I think that Minnesota, even at home, gets beat up a decent amount by Penn State. I don't think they've been in this type of situation before. Minnesota's got a good football team. They don't have a great football team. And I think that we're going to see Penn State show them what physicality is all about. I think they cover. Penn State 7-point favorites on the road at Minnesota, and give me the Nittany Lions to cover. So, Cousin Dino, there's our homage to you, brother. We've each got some college. We've each got some pro picks. We just shared them with you, and now we're going to take our final break of the hour. When we return, we'll get some more of your picks. I want to discuss Cajuns bowl possibilities now that Billy Napier's UL Raging Cajuns are bowl eligible. And the millisecond that we return, I've got a really cool announcement to make about our show tomorrow. So we've got some juice for you. Stick with us. After this timeout, I'll give you that announcement. And we'll bounce right back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Fired up to tell you this. I understand. On Acadiana Sports Station, we air Houston Astros baseball, and yeah, the Stros lost to the Washington Nationals, but we love our own, and there's no question about that. The Nationals, of course, featured former STM Cougar, LSU Tiger, Andrew Stevenson, and we've got it locked up. Andrew Stevenson will join B2BS tomorrow at 4:30. Don't believe we'll have him out live at the Taproom River Ranch. Obviously, I'll let you know tomorrow at 4 if that changes. But even still, live over the phone, we're jacked up about it. A World Series champion and Youngsville's own, Andrew Stevenson, hopping aboard Bumper to Bumper Sports tomorrow. Clint, this thing is still pretty darn fresh. The Nationals winning it all. I'm excited to have Andrew aboard.
As you should be, Bimby. Anytime you're going to have a World Series champion about, 7 days after they lock the thing down, I think that's definitely huge and well-deserved.
So we're looking forward to that. Make sure you tune in. Tell your friends. You can listen. 103.7 FM, 103.7thegame.com, and the free 103.7 The Game mobile app. You don't have to be in Acadiana to listen live to that interview. So Andrew Stevenson will join the program tomorrow at 4:30. Some guy named Gordy Rush at 5 o'clock as well. But Andrew Stevenson at 4:30 is your big takeaway. All right, CD, let's transition to the Raging Cajuns. And with six wins, UL now bowl eligible. I think anybody with a working knowledge of college football and the bowl system understands you don't necessarily guarantee yourself a spot, right, with six, depending on how many teams there are to fill up the potential bowls that are available. But right now, with four games left in the regular season, a real opportunity, and you could even say a better-than-average chance of being in, maybe even hosting, the second annual Sun Belt Conference championship game, these raging Cajuns in year two under Billy Napier are going to win somewhere between 7 and 10 games before they get to what would be their bowl. And so right now, it's just a matter of how high can you climb. And quickly, a shout-out. You go to 1037thegame.com. There's a really good story up on this, and it'll flesh out 10 different prognostications of where the Cajuns would go bowling, could go bowling. I'm going to give you some of my favorites from that and then pick your brain. What you like the most, maybe what you think the most realistic is, and what's most out there. Multiple picks for Mobile, and that's the Mobile Alabama Bowl. That would be played on January 6th, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Multiple picks for Montgomery. That would be the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl to be played on Saturday, December the 21st. Multiple picks in for the one that we're all very familiar with, the Arnell Carriers Bowl in New Orleans. That one, again, would be Saturday, December the 21st. I'll give you some of the competition, let you react to these three, and then I'll share some of the less popular but interesting. Toledo is the most common opponent for a game that would be played in Mobile. Western Michigan and Ohio, which would be a repeat game, most common for Montgomery. And Southern Miss, the only real selection that the Cajuns would be pegged to play against if they go to New Orleans. You and I both attended that game the last time that the Cajuns and Southern Miss played in New Orleans. I'm going to tell you right now, I wouldn't be too thrilled about that. One of the other reasons is that team and that fan base is going to travel a lot. And so you're not exactly taking over the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And frankly, two trips to New Orleans where Mississippi schools outnumber UL fans would be a little too much for me in about a 4.5 month span, because I just watched that movie and listened to that song with Mississippi State. But what do you make out of those other two, Mobile, Montgomery, and the opponents?
Mobile, Montgomery, it feels like that could be where the Cajuns go, because obviously we're talking about the Sun Belt Conference champions are going to go to the New Orleans Bowl right here, right now. Of course, that could change if App State runs the table, being 11-1, 12-1, whatever they'd wind up being after the title game. They would probably be more likely than not being snatched up. Not quite New Year's Six Bowl.
Definitely not New Year's Six.
But definitely one of those like high-caliber bowl games that you're going to be in.
If you watch that Memphis game on Saturday night, that's a little different level right now. Those teams out of the AAC are going to claim those New Year's Six from the Group of Five.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like those are going to be one of the two programs that claims it. It feels like almost every single year that's what happens. And to me, it's going to be either Mobile or Camellia. I'm leaning a lot more the former Dollar General Bowl. That's going to be where this one's going to be at.
Good, sir. It is now called the Mobile Alabama Bowl.
Yeah, that's so, why the artist formerly known as the Dollar General Bowl.
They have named the bowl. Forget. I kind of actually like this. This is a power
It was
move.
Originally called the Mobile Alabama Bowl.
Okay, so it's a revert and a retread, but it's no longer the advertiser. It's City State Bowl. So
yeah.
We'd like to welcome you back to Cajun Field for the Lafayette, Louisiana Bowl here on the Ocho, right? So those are the most common. There's one that has the Cajuns going back to the Cure Bowl in Orlando. And then there is my favorite.
Okay, go
for
ahead.
For several reasons. The Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. Dude, I'm not joking.
Okay.
I understand with how high the Cajuns are likely to climb, either being champions or runners-up of the Sun Belt, they might be taking out of this realm. But consider the upsides to this. And CBS Sports were the only ones that had the Cajuns slotted in here. It's played on New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Okay, so number one, it's the game, I guess aside from that December 31 Saturday, it's the game where you're least likely to be working. It would lead either directly into or be during your New Year's Eve celebrations.
Okay.
And the competition has a chance to be a lot greater.
Okay.
What are you, Mr. Mackey me over there?
Okay.
All right, if you don't have anything to say, no mkaying from you.
You got it.
Southern Miss in New Orleans makes no one excited. Ohio as a repeat ball game this year in Montgomery, same thing. Western Michigan in Montgomery, that has some cachet. Toledo in Mobile, it's a travelable game. You could make a stop off there and then head over to Gulf Shores or, you know, Pensacola, Destin for your holidays. That's not a bad deal. I could get into that as well. But Fresno State is the potential opponent if you're playing at the Arizona Bowl. I like the idea of conquering new territory, and this certainly would be that when it comes to bowl games. I love the idea of New Year's Eve, and I like the opponent better than just about anybody else that I've heard so far. So, Clint, can I sell you a little bit of stock in the Cajuns going to Arizona? I understand. New Orleans is more convenient. It would mean that they are conference champs. There are a lot of good spoils that come along with it. But give me New Year's Eve in the desert against better competition.
And I definitely think that's a great idea to have, but, man, I think you have a better chance of selling me oceanfront property in Arizona rather than selling me on the Arizona Bowl.
You just don't get it. You got to follow me here. You got to be with me on this one. I understand that logic says pound New Orleans, Mobile, and Montgomery. I just think that would be super cool. LSU went out to the desert to take on UCF, and that went pretty well for everybody. The Cajuns can certainly follow suit. After all, Billy Napier, Rob Sale, they just came from the desert before coming to UL. I think that would be awfully cool, even if I understand it's not the most realistic. All right, enough of that. We're almost halfway home. Before we hit our hour break, let's squeeze in one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Accuracy. And last night, really, yesterday afternoon, Jerry Palm, CBSSports.com, was dead on balls accurate. He predicted the top four exactly as it fell. Ohio State, LSU, Bama, Penn State. So here you go, sports fans. He's already given his final four. Jerry Palm said this is how it's going to end the second week of December. It'll be Bama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, and LSU 4, which would bring to fruition my prediction from August. So me and Jerry Palm, we're riding in the same exact vehicle. And we are the bandwagon leaders. That's the final word of the hour, accuracy, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be back with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. For the next hour, my co-pilot, the famous Clint D, with us inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. LSU number 2 in the initial batch of college football playoff rankings. We have discussed ad nauseum. We'll do more of that in this hour. Take your phone calls as well, and we'll also give you insight from the other side, the best from Cecil Hurt yesterday. But today, hey, we've got one of the best waiting for us. Going live to New Orleans aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, Ken Trahan. He is the owner, CEO of CrescentCitySports.com. Ken, it's great to have you back aboard. How are you today?
Hey, Ben, doing fine. Thank you.
So we've got the injury report from the Saints. Most notably, Jared Cook, Tre'Quan Smith, and Patrick Robinson, all full participants. Alvin Kamara upgraded to limited. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think some people felt like Kamara would be the one that would be full go and that there would be concern about others, and it turned out to be just the opposite. Look, the good news here is that the loss of Kamara has been mitigated, obviously, over the last couple of games by the performance of Latavius Murray. So, again, this roster is built to succeed. It's built to win. They've shown that over and over again with the next man up, you know, the way they've reacted to the injuries that they've had. So, look, I think it's good news. Again, the extra week certainly helps. And, you know, the Falcons are certainly not world beaters, although they'll give the Saints their best. You know that. So, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised about Kamara. But then again, they really don't tell you about injuries, so you just have to roll with it and try to figure it out for yourself until they tell you. So I guess that's an indication that we'll probably get all the others and maybe or maybe not Kamara this week. And look, if there's any question whatsoever, wait another week, right? Again, you know, don't worry about the short term. You should be able to beat this team at home with or without him, I would think.
What did we learn from Drew Brees' first return from action against the Cardinals? What did you learn from that? And I guess how does that inform your thoughts on the way number nine will perform moving forward?
Well, he was terrific. I mean, you know, other than trying to throw the ball deep to Zach Lyon against Patrick Peterson, he was terrific. He was accurate as can be. And I think what people saw was, you know, the difference, what sets him apart and what makes him one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Teddy Bridgewater played extremely well. He did a really fine job. And it was impressive, you know, what he did. And obviously, I don't think anybody would have envisioned the Saints being 5-0 without Drew Brees. But then Bridgewater played well. But what you see with Brees is the fact that he has an unbelievably quick recall, an unbelievable sense of what's happening around him to be able to come off of first and second receivers to find the open man. He identifies more quickly than anybody in the game where to go with the football, and I think all those things certainly lent themselves to the success that he had. He completed passes to 11 different receivers, and I think that speaks volumes about who he is.
As we look at this offensive line, Ken Trahan, our guest on 103.7 The Game, a lot of experience on the outside, and yet a new center this year. Your observations, a half a season in, about Eric McCoy.
Well, he's done a good job. I mean, it's a tough position to walk into. That's the captain of the offensive line. Has to make the line calls, obviously initiates every play. I think at this point, when you look at what he's done so far this year, you have to be very impressed. I mean, I know I am. He's done a really fine job. Everything they hoped he would be, he has been. He is physical at the point of attack. He's more of a, you know, more of a run blocker than a pass blocker at this stage, but he's still a solid pass blocker, I think. I think he's done better than some people thought he would do. So, look, he's done a solid job. They have the best pair of tackles in the league, in my estimation. And their guards have been acceptable to solid. So, and, you know, I think that's pretty much what you're looking at right now is probably in terms of a unit, they're meshing very well. Didn't play so well the first couple of weeks of the season, but then they really started to get their act together in week three at Seattle, and it's just gotten better ever since.
We'll stick with the offense, Ken. Jared Cook, Tre'Quan Smith back into the fold. Who gets squeezed out a little bit, both in terms of playing time and maybe share the receiving pie?
Well, I mean, Smith, you know, he's got to prove that he can go out there and do it, first of all. I mean, Jed Ginn's going to play, of course. And when they go to two receiver sets, it's often going to begin along with Thomas. They go to three receiver sets. I would imagine Smith will get his way back onto the field in an ideal situation. He's your third guy. But, again, he hasn't played in a while. There is a trust level with Austin Carr in the slot. So we'll see. You know, in all likelihood, that means Deontay Harris won't get time at wide receiver. But, again, that's a luxury. Jared Cook is the guy they signed to help mitigate the lack of productivity at the receiver position, and they're counting on him to be that guy in the second half of the season, which he has not been by and large to this stage. So, look, we all know what happened last year. Second half of the season, last six, seven games, they dropped off offensively. People adjusted. They took Michael Thomas away. And the other part of that was our offensive line was banged up last year. Well, they're not banged up this year, and they're getting some key parts back. So let's see how that works itself out. I think this is a better team and a better roster this year than it was last year. I thought they were the best team in the league last year.
And I think a big part of the reason is the way they're playing defensively. That's where I want to head next. This defensive line, think back to August, right? They had some new pieces, Malcolm Brown and company, still without Sheldon Rankins, trying to figure out how much that Davenport would come along. Are they the strength of this defense now?
Well, I think the whole defense is good. I mean, when you look at what they've done, they have a defensive line that has depth. I mean, Trey Hendrickson is a good football player. Davenport's played well. Cam Jordan's elite. Malcolm Brown's done a good job. David Onyemata's good. He's very physical. Sheldon Rankins, you don't have to have him being out of sight like he was last year in the second half of the season because of that, but he's going to get better and better, obviously, if he plays his way back from the Achilles injury. You know, and then you got others too, Shai Tuttle, Mario Edwards, so there's a lot of depth there. And linebacker, they lost Anzalone before the season started, but, you know, they've really not missed him by and large, even though he's very athletic. Klein's done a good job. Mario Davis has played great once again. And then the secondary is deep. And I think we saw that with C.J. Gardner-Johnson stepping in for P.J. Williams, and he played so well. I don't know how you take him off the field now. I just don't think you can. He's that good of a football player.
We're coming down the stretch with Ken Trahan, owner, CEO of Crescent City Sports, also chairman of the board and GM for the Saints Hall of Fame Museum. All right, help me out with handicapping these NFC playoffs that we know are still 8 weeks away. The Saints, a one-loss team. Last week, both Minnesota, Green Bay took a loss. And this Monday night, we've got a possibility for San Fran to maybe get its first up against Seattle. Where do you think New Orleans fits in on that race to get a bye the first week?
Well, I think they're in a good position, obviously, at this point. They're going to be favored the rest of the way. I mean, who's going to be favored against them? I don't think anyone will. I think they're going to be the favorite in every game they play. And the fact that they get the 49ers at home is huge. That's going to be a gigantic game, obviously. You know, you got the division games, and those are always tough. Your opponents know you well. But I still think they'll be favored at Carolina, even though Carolina's a pretty good team. They got the Colts at home, was a pretty good team. And, of course, you know, we know about Tampa still with another game, and Atlanta with two, including the one coming up this weekend. So, look, they're in a good position. I think they are obviously in a position to win them all if they play to their ability. But, you know, that's not probable given the NFL and how difficult it is to navigate. I do think it's very possible they go 7-1 like they did in the first half. And if you get the 14-2, if that's not good enough for the first seed, well, shame on you. I mean, goodness gracious, it took 13 last year to get the first seed. It might take 14 this year because of the nature of what's happening. Although I will say this, the 49ers schedule gets a lot more difficult in the second half of the season than it was in the first half. So I think they got some losses coming on that schedule.
Ken, before we let you go, always love picking your brain on high school football. And the rumblings that I'm getting this way is that there's a good chance the Divisions 2, 3, and 4 title games could be played at Cajun Field, while the Division 1 likely to be in New Orleans, maybe Uelman Stadium. Is that hold water with what you're hearing?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, that's all possible. Again, based on what's transpired, it's really the higher seed has the opportunity to make that decision if they have an agreement with the team that they're playing. So, you know, again, Uelman Stadium would be a natural site for the Division One, in particular with Rummel and Curtis being in that situation, and maybe even Brother Martin, Catholic High could upset that and be a host team, and then they might want to play at Memorial Stadium in Baton Rouge. And then, of course, with regard to 2, 3, and 4, Cajun Field would make a lot of sense given the geography and some of the teams that would be involved in it. So, yeah, I think those are certain possibilities. And again, the thing that's troublesome is that we're still having this discussion. I mean, we're in week 10 of the season, and no one knows who's doing what. And it's very frustrating. And it's my opinion that they all should be playing in the Superdome. And I think it's unfortunate, and it's not fair to these kids. They deserve that opportunity. And we all know the times were bad for the select schools, and that's part of the reason they're doing this. But let's hope that this thing changes in January at the convention, and we can put this to bed once and for all and put this organization back together. Because if not, then you can say goodbye to these select schools. They're going to leave this organization.
I agree, and I'm hoping this experience we're all going through is not for naught. Ken, as always, thank you so much for doing this. Look forward to catching up down the road.
You got it. My pleasure, Ben. Thanks for having me.
That's the great, Ken Trahan. As we give him the gate there and let him go along his way, that was incredibly well said at the end there. And while I am a huge proponent of the idea of state championship games at Cajun Field, that's with the understanding that it's the best of what we have right now. And I think what we have right now has always been designed, not just by our guy Mike Boyer, Tony's Catholic, but by those who have a say and have some active brain cells rattling around on this LSA side of things. It's always been the design that you have to upset the apple cart enough to where everyone, wait for it, gets back together. And then, yeah, plays in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. I'm fine with that. I want that too. But while we have this discord, I love the idea. Love it. The opportunity for Cajun Field to host whatever it can get its hands on. Because then, guess where I'm going to go next? I love the idea of the Cajun Dome getting its hands on anything it can come March Madness. Because that used to kick some royal ass, didn't it? When Cajun Dome had rocking games with local teams from around the state and even here in Acadiana that played each other for state titles in that type of atmosphere, you bet, under the current situation we're in, that's exactly what I'm rooting for. In fact, I'm doing everything I can to make it happen, which, again, my power is not what Ken Trahan's is, but I love his insight, and I'm glad we had him here, and I'm glad he said what he did, because I concur. All right, we're going to hit our first break of the hour. When we return, we'll take your calls on that subject, and we'll get back into the college football playoff, maybe a little bit from Coach O and Nick Saban, if we have time as well, from today's SEC teleconference. We are busy on a hump day, and after a brief timeout, we'll be back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Tip of the cap again to Ken Trahan, CrescentCitySports.com. That was a lot of fun. He's been our second great guest in, well, less than an hour and 20 minutes on this hump day. John Garcia Jr. was with us at 4:15. You missed either or both of those interviews. First, shame on you. Second, within a couple of minutes from now, you'll be able to go to 1037thegame.com, tap on demand, and you can listen at your leisure. All right, Clint, I want to get back into the college football playoff rankings. Got to make sure we allow an opportunity and a platform for our 5 o'clock peeps. For those that have just tuned in, you probably know by now. Ohio State, LSU, Bama, Penn State. That's your 1-4. Undefeated Clemson, defending Natty champs at number 5. Georgia is at 6. And what is, I think, jumping off the page at most people is the word dominance. And that's what I want to discuss here. Feel free to jump in. We got time for you. 706-0111. Strength of schedule and dominance against that schedule. That's what's being pushed down everybody's throat by the chairman of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. And it's hard to imagine strength of schedule getting much more difficult than LSU's. I understand Texas has fizzled out, and that win now doesn't look like it did then. Comma, but you're going to have a hard time selling me on the fact that Ohio State has had a schedule that's been on a par or really in the same ballpark as LSU's. That's going to be a hard sell for me. And so if you're going to tell me that they've been more consistent in dominating their schedule, yeah, but against who? I think it's a very fair question. And, you know, the Wisconsin game aside, I could look at Ohio State's schedule and, boy, I would do a lot of nitpicking there. And it's not just a Big Ten hate fest, because Ohio State deserves to be in the top three, in my opinion. And if they went out, they deserve to stay in the top two or three going into January. And so they are a worthy contender. And, I mean, year in, year out, there's a reason that they're in the college football playoff. They usually earn their spot at this table. So I have a hard time believing that they've earned it ahead of LSU right now. That said, I don't care, and it doesn't matter that LSU is not number one right now. They control their destiny, and they have that great strength of schedule. Whether they were one or two this week, if they lose against Bama, they're going to have to try and be that at-large team. And I think they've got a good shot at it. But being two now doesn't really diminish their chances had they been number one instead. That's just kind of the way I look at it. All right, let's take a trip out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chad, welcome in. What you got? Hey, Chad, you with us?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Ken? Hello?
Hey, Clint tried to cut you at the knees, but we got you, bud. What you got for us?
Hey, Ben. Man, the chairman of the football playoff system, he's an athletic director, right?
I believe so, yes. I know they've is it Kirby Hocutt now, Clint? Make sure that's a fact. Chad, go ahead.
And I want to say he's at Oregon, the athletic director. So that doesn't really still wells me at all. And also, Ben, it'd be a travesty if Alabama loses and they still get in, man, with that resume they have. I can't believe it. I just don't think it will happen, man. Thank you, man.
You got it. You got it. I'm sorry, Rob Mullins. So there you go. I'm behind the times. It was Jeff Long, and then it was Kirby Hocutt, and now Rob Mullins. So I don't get as bent out of shape with selection committee bias and some of that type of conspiracy talk. I mean, Oregon is 8-1. They're the number 7 team in the country by this ranking system, and that's pretty consistent with where they are if you look at the AP poll. So I don't know that they really got it wrong there. And I don't know that they got it entirely wrong with the way this thing was spit out last night. I'm fine. Again, telling me that the strength of schedule for Ohio State is up there with, say, LSU or some of the others that have played multiple top 10 teams, even Georgia. And frankly, that's what's buoying Georgia, whether you think they should be there or not. And I think they're a spot or two higher than I expected. But Georgia has played top 10 Notre Dame and top 10 Florida. That's two-thirds of the way to being where LSU is right now in terms of that type of strength of schedule. Tigers, of course, with two they've played in the top 10 from inside the SEC and one on the road outside of the SEC. So I don't get up in arms about where LSU is with this one. And I can tell you this, Nick Saban doesn't either. You don't believe me, I'm going to let you go straight to the elephant's mouth here. And the head elephant, Nick Saban, said, I'm not even remotely focused on those rankings.
Look, I didn't even look at the college football rankings. I don't even know what we were ranked. You know, it's not going to matter if we don't win the games that we play. So we're more focused on what we got to do to try to be successful against the challenging teams that we have to play. So, you know, we've talked about this before. We're doing everything we can to try to improve, you know, the schedule that we have, and we're going to continue to do that.
Sounds like somebody disturbed him from doing a Sudoku puzzle that he was really, really into to get that soundbite. And I don't believe you, Nick. I don't believe that you are actively trying to improve your schedule. I'm sorry. I don't buy that part. And look, I know from experience and from all of our conversations with Verge Osbury that these kickoff classic games, they come to fruition less than a year until they were played. And so you had Duke this year in your kickoff classic game. Pretty sure you had intel that Duke was going to be very, very mediocre, and that might be a generous term this year, when you scheduled them. And I also know this. Like so many of our local high school football teams, once you're really good, it's not always easy to get somebody to want to play you. So I know that people aren't lining up exactly to play Alabama. But still, telling me that you are doing everything you can to improve your schedule, I'm not quite there with that one yet. But we'll get more from Nick. And I bet you I will agree a little more with this answer. He gave a take earlier during the SEC teleconference this morning on Joe Brady, Joe Burrow, LSU's offensive brain trust, and the guy that keeps slinging the pill.
Well, I think they're definitely doing what features the players that they have in a very positive way, and I think it shows in how they played offensively, you know, being one of the best offensive teams in the country.
Speaking of Burrow, Ed Ogeron gave some sound on his star quarterback as well. He was asked to look back to Burrow last year versus Alabama.
Well, you know, Joe's a competitor. He's one of the toughest players I've seen. It's no surprise to me. Joe's going to play if at all. He can play with any injury. He's going to play. He's a great competitor. He wants to win.
And I mean, obviously, this year he's been fine. I mean, was that just something?
Yeah, I don't know if that's Michael Cobble or whoever's trying to infiltrate my airwaves.
That was
there.
Brooks Cabina with the Advocate.
Never heard of him. No, I'm just kidding. So, if that doesn't make sense to you, that comment from Ogeron, it relates back to a Ross Dellinger SI.com feature that came out this week where he really spilled the beans on the fact that Burrow goofed up his shoulder pretty darn good Thursday during practice leading into LSU's Bama game last year. So much so that with a back injury still persisting for backup Miles Brennan, that it was Andre Sale, a walk-on quarterback who was taking legitimate first-team reps down the stretch of last year's practice week prior to Bama. Interesting. And Burrow came in, toughed it out, and played. Can't imagine that meant a hill of beans in the way that game turned out. But this year, healthy, full go, offense is full tilt. Should be very, very interesting. All right, we're halfway home in our 5 o'clock hour. When we return, it is time to throw some shade, and I'm doubling down on today's shade. And then the best from Cecil Hurt of the Tuscaloosa News. We had him yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour. The 5 o'clock crowd gets him on the way out today before we turn you over to Five Guys Stories and Lies, 6 to 8 p.m. Stick with us. After a brief timeout, we got more of the good stuff coming at you. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go. Back in. More of the good stuff as Clint and I take you home on your hump day, work day, November the 6th. And we can't stop, won't stop at Acadiana Sports Station just because Clint and I get to 6 p.m. That's when we pass the baton to Don Allen. Five Guys Stories and Lies, 6 to 8 tonight. It's a beautiful thing when Houston Astros baseball is over. Sorry for all the Astros faithful out there, but for a programmer, it's like McDonald's. I'm loving it. We pass the baton. Tuesday's the Tiger Rag Radio. Wednesday's the Five Guys Stories and Lies. I just need to maximize the space we've got. And I think I'm ready to do that the best way we know how in our 5 o'clock hour. We get to pay homage to our good friends at the Patio Center and remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com, and fall in love with the inventory. I know that you're going to. The standing seam metal awnings, the retractable shades and screens, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Sit down with Mark and Company. They're the best in the business at helping you to create a vision that they're going to fulfill for you. And they'll do it before the next Astros season. They'll have you with the best patio game on the block. You'll be the envy of all of your family and friends. And then only invite them over when you damn well please. That's the name of the game. Again, it all starts when you head to the website, patiocenter.com. They are the kings of customization, and it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
A twofer on a Wednesday. One is ground that's already been covered in the program. I'll get there in a moment. Let's lead off with Baker Mayfield. These Cleveland Browns, they got a lot of people excited in July, in August, prior to that when they signed OBJ, and now all they are is kind of a punchline. Now all we're doing is throwing shade at some of their off-the-field antics. No, cats aren't out there getting arrested, you know, no domestic violence, none of that type of stuff. So again, I understand that there are levels to things, but this is still just stupid. And the fact that we're discussing this, boy, it better disguise the way they're playing on the field. CD, Baker Mayfield, during the game this past Sunday, was sporting a Fu Manchu, or even if you will, a bit of a handlebar mustache. This was during a 24-19 loss to the lowly Denver Broncos. And then after the game, he showed up with that horrendous mustache. He had clearly shaven directly after. He was asked about it today, because this is where the Cleveland Browns season is at, and he responded thusly, quote, "The original thought for me, do handlebars. I was undefeated before Sunday with the handlebar mustache, so I shaved it off because I didn't deserve it," end quote. Clint, the Browns are 2-6. I'm not really sure what the hell we're talking about when it comes to undefeated at anything. They are 2-6, and this guy's talking about his superstitious facial hair. Who the hell has Baker Mayfield become suddenly?
I don't know. It feels like almost like a dollar store Johnny Manziel, especially whenever he went out during his post game on Sunday, looking like the Wet Bandits.
Cleveland is just swallowing up talent and spitting it out, not quite as whole as it arrived. All right, I mentioned it's a twofer. This just bears repeating. The college football playoff first batch of rankings came out last night. Hey, forget about who's in the top 4 or 6. Could you imagine being undefeated, number 12, Baylor, undefeated, number 17, Minnesota, and trailing teams with 2, and in one case, 3 losses? You really just don't matter. Yes, you're in the Big 12, Baylor. Yes, you're in the Big 10, Minnesota, but you just don't matter. So never forget, as hard as you try, as high as you climb, it's just not going to be good enough.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Makes you wonder, what would happen if Vanderbilt were undefeated? Okay, well, we don't need to worry about that. We do need to worry about hitting our final break. pay some brief bills, and then we're going to get you back to the Alabama side of things. Some of the best from Cecil Hurt yesterday. It still applies today. We run that back for our 5 o'clock crowd. So stick with us. After a brief timeout, we cap off today's show. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
What a day it's been, and we've got a little more of our show for you before we cascade into Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game. But once more, Ben and Clint hit you with the good stuff. Already you've heard from John Garcia Jr., so technically we've kind of gone behind enemy lines already once. And then Ken Trahan here in our home state. We went to New Orleans earlier this hour. I want to end with some of the best we had yesterday from Cecil Hurt. He's been covering Alabama since the 80s with the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. He also happens to be maybe the most hilarious down south Twitterer, you know, a handle that tweets in sports. He's absolutely phenomenal. And he joined us yesterday to share some of his expertise, a little bit of his flavor leading into LSU Bama. Some of this we discussed with John Garcia Jr. So the 4 o'clock crowd, maybe you're acclimated, but my guess is this will be fresh for just about everybody because this is really the meat and potatoes of a guy who knows this program, who knows this year's team. And I think he's got a pretty good idea of how they stack up with LSU. We've been giving you our side, firing bullets out of our clip. Here's some of what he had to fire away on yesterday's program. The best from Cecil Hurt of Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Clint, let's get right into it. We asked him yesterday, all right, what's the deal with Tua? How much can you tell us? And really, what do you expect?
Tua has practiced both days. He was in the media viewing period today, you know, doing the routine things that quarterbacks do during game week. You know, Mac Jones is getting some reps as well, but you know, there hasn't been anything that looks extraordinary. You know, Tua looks like he's participating fully. So, I would expect that. If he continues to progress, doesn't have a setback, I would expect that he would play.
Pretty clear, right? He expects Tua to play. So do we. So I don't think there's any gap in understanding. It's a little bit like last year. I'll continue to tell you. However, I think that this year's injury is more significant. You start to get into that high ankle sprain territory, and we just watched it, as Gordy Rush told us last week. We just watched that injury take Glenn Logan on LSU's defensive line about 5 weeks to get right. I think there's a good chance we're watching it take Alvin Kamara in front of our eyes take 4 to 5 weeks to get right. And so I think the possibility of Mac Jones coming in and having to play a touch, it still exists. Start and go wire to wire, none of us really anticipate that. But I still ask the question, and there's a darn good answer from Cecil Hurt. How does Mac Jones playing change the way that this ball game is called from the Tide side?
Well, he doesn't have the arm strength that Tua has, and so you might do a few things differently, but Mac played about as well against Arkansas as a backup could play. Now, again, you know, what's the competition? I can't, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about Arkansas, but it's not nearly as good as LSU, so I think everybody accepts that. So Mac can certainly manage a game, can certainly throw the ball. It certainly is, you know, good a backup as there is in the SEC. You know, nobody's better when they go from their starter to their backup, and I wouldn't say that Alabama would be either. But it certainly doesn't mean that they don't have a chance to win the game. They just have to manage the game a little differently.
All right, we'll take it from Alabama's offense to their defense. consider this a bit of a peek behind enemy lines and a scouting report on the Crimson Tide. The biggest difference, as you're going to hear from Cecil Hurt, on how Bama typically has to prepare for an LSU football team coming to town is having to be ready for Joe Burrow and this year's offense. It's a completely different animal, and it's got Alabama's attention.
Yes and no. You know, it's a little bit different. You have to plan differently. You have to make an offensive plan that assures you score enough points to win, which, you know, might have been, even last year, you might have felt like 20 points would win. As it turned out, it didn't even take that many. But going into the game, you probably thought about that number. It might take 35 to win this year. So that part of it's different. But the one thing I always say about Alabama is that, with the exception of their freshmen, you know, one advantage that they have against most of the teams that they play is that they've all been in as big a situation as you can be in. You know, they've been in SEC championship games, national championship games. You know, Tua's won a national championship coming off the bench, and he's played in another national championship game. So they're not going to get too high over one game. Nick does a great job of keeping them, you know, down to earth and focused. I thought last year LSU burned out all their energy by Saturday afternoon and had already played the game in their mind and was a little bit flat, if you can imagine that, in that atmosphere, but was a little bit flat when Saturday night came. Now, you know, Ed's probably learned from that. He's probably managing that a little bit differently. It seems to be a little bit more low-key down there. So we'll just have to see about that. But that's the one thing, you know, no stage is bigger than the stage that all Alabama players have already been on. And in some cases, if you're Terrell Lewis, Raekwon Davis, who's a senior, you know, you've been in playoffs all 3 years of your career. So, and you've been in huge LSU games three times. So there's an edge to that. There's an advantage to that.
I'll continue to echo all week long. Look, it's day 3 of 5, your work week prep for LSU Bama. I'll continue to tell you that it's all about getting Tua off of his spot, making him uncomfortable. And kind of like you just heard right there from Cecil, it's the same, reciprocated. Getting an injured Tua off of his spot, not necessarily trying to knock the kid out of the game, but just knocking him off his spot, making him have to kind of play with his head on a swivel and not be in a quick rhythm with those wide receivers and their timing routes, that's going to be huge, I think. And there's no question. And so when it comes to what Bama will attempt to do to LSU, Joe Burrow, and making him not able to set in the pocket, it's all about the front seven. And a lot's been made this week, rightfully so, about Bama with a fairly inexperienced front. As Cecil Hurt reminds you here, it's more about the linebackers that are green. The front, the actual defensive line, they're doing quite well this year with one of the real stars of college football.
They're learning. You know, Nick Saban makes a great point that, you know, it's not just a question, particularly at linebacker. The defensive ends are excellent. Terrell Lewis is, with the exception of Chase Young at Ohio State, Terrell Lewis may be the best defensive end in the country, edge rusher. And Anthony Jennings is really good, and they've got Raekwon Davis and DJ Dale on the inside. So that group is fine. It's not as deep as Alabama's been in recent years, but that front four starting unit is excellent. With the linebackers, you know, it's not just that they're having to use freshmen. You know, they're having to use Christian Harris from Aaron Baton Rouge and Shane Lee. It's that, and Nick Saban makes this point, everything is new to them, and they can't stand on the sidelines and watch somebody more experienced and learn that way. If Dylan Moses were out there, if Josh McMillan were out there, then all your learning doesn't have to come from actually being out there and getting physical reps. But they don't have those guys. So the only way to teach them is to put them out there. But what you don't want to do is wear them out in practice because you're trying to teach them so many situations
But if they're not out there, it's an even younger, less experienced guy out there. So it's really been difficult for them to learn without, you know, hands-on coaching and being active. So they've had to balance that with how much work do you want to give them in practice and keep their legs fresh for Saturdays. So they've gotten better. They're certainly better in their assignments than they were at the start of the season when Alabama had lost two linebackers in August. And they had to be put in there. But they're still freshmen. They're still learning.
We'll take one more from Cecil Hurt, and then we got a skedaddle. We got Don Allen and company nipping at my heels. Five Guys Stories and Lies coming very quickly on Acadiana Sports Station. All right, forget about the X's and O's, and let's get to the guys with the headsets on that get paid the big bucks on the sideline. One of them gets paid more big bucks than the other, bigger bucks, you could say, and that's Nick Saban. I asked Cecil Hurt the difference, his opinion, between Saban and Ogeron and Saban and Miles. I didn't get some of what I was expecting, but I still think we got some goods here.
It probably makes a difference that Coach Ogeron isn't the immediate successor. You know, he's not the guy who had to come in after the guy. On the other hand, Les had won a national championship, and I think that Coach O is still trying to reach that plateau. He's certainly been very successful this year as a team that's certainly capable of winning it, but he hadn't done it yet. So it's a little bit different. He's certainly a different personality than Les was. They're both interesting in their own way. And Nick is Nick. And so it's an interesting matchup. I think he has a lot of respect for Coach Orgeron, and they'll go forward from there. Coach Orgeron hadn't been able to beat him yet at Ole Miss or LSU, but he's came close at Ole Miss one time. And so it's been a good rivalry. And he's just, as y'all know very well, he's just a different. Les did it his way. You know, Ed does it his way. Not to say that one way's right, one way's wrong. They've both been very successful.
So now you've heard Cecil Hurt's response, and you're wondering, well, what did you expect, Ben? I can only tell you what I observe. Nick is the same. The guy on the other sideline doesn't change. He won't change. You don't have to worry about that or lose any sleep over it. As for Ed Ogeron, I think that there's a bit of a different approach to this ball game. Last year, Ed learned a big lesson. You can't get too hyped too quick. You got to let this one come to you a little bit, and you can't overemphasize this game for two straight weeks during the bye. You can't do it all the way back to August. I think that's a difference as well between Ed and Les. And maybe that's part of what Cecil was getting to in saying that Les had to directly follow the legend and the Nicktator. It's a little different for Coach O. All right, fun show so far already. We've given a tip of the cap to John Garcia Jr. and Ken Trahan. We got to thank Cecil Hurt. So nice, we played it twice. And for the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. Do not forget, tomorrow I'll not only be out at the Taproom River Ranch, Andrew Stevenson, former STM Cougar, LSU Tiger, and now a World Series champion with the Washington Nationals. Andrew Stevenson will join B2BS at 4:30. We are fired up about that. All right, thanks for joining us today. It is time for Five Guys Stories and Lies, coming up next on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.